This is The Guardian.
Hi, Pod fans. It's Max here. Just to say that Steve Bruce leaving Newcastle by mutual consent, well, I mean, that's what they could call it, happened about an hour after we finished recording the podcast. So coming up first is an explanation of why Barry's audio doesn't sound right. Then the podcast. We'll discuss Steve Bruce on tomorrow's pod. Cheers. I hope you enjoy the pod, which is about to happen. Barry forgot to press record. I mean, how long has it been? 2 years since he has to press one button. To be fair, he has to press that one button twice to enact the recording, but he failed to do so. So you'll hear Barry over Zoom, but the audio quality is good. You will hear me, Philippe, Lars and Sid in high quality. And here's the podcast. Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. The Champions League, a dirty 3 points for Liverpool, according to Jurgen Klopp. A blinding start for the Reds, a great comeback, a red card, penalties given and overturned. So let's talk about a non-handshake for the first 20 minutes. PSG also get a soft penalty and a scratchy win, but a good Panenka is a lovely thing. Championship manager regen Cole Palmer scores twice as City walks past Bruges into end Sheriff's run. And are Ajax good again? Also, joy for Arsenal as they salvage a late draw at home to Crystal Palace, a FIFA rant for Philippe, what that sponsorship vote means for Newcastle, a really fun sodden goal for Plymouth, and a steward getting a penalty right on his head. You've asked some questions as well, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. FPL VAR says, what a lineup. Four. I didn't realise we were that alluring. Barry Glendenning, welcome.
Hello, Max.
Hello, Lars Sivertsen.
Good morning, Max.
And hello, Philippe Auclair.
Good evening, Max, as I believe. Amazingly enough.
It is. Yeah.
It is not the same time where you are.
I know. But we're all still here. And it's probably a different time for different listeners all over the world. Joining us for a part one cameo from Spain, Sid Lowe. Welcome, Sid.
Morning, Max.
You sound a bit sleepy, Sid. You sound like you didn't want to be messaged by me saying, can you come on today? Because you wanted to lie.
I don't even know what time. But the thing is, that was at a reasonable time yesterday. And then the whole day went by. And then I was leaving the stadium looking at the clock thinking, oh, Christ alive. But anyway, there we go.
Well, look, you chose your job, didn't you? So, you know. Lots of people would love to have it.
Did I, Max? Did I, Max, or did it choose me?
That's good. Do we have free will? We don't. Anyway, Atleti 2, Liverpool 3. You were there, Sid. How was it?
It was wild. It was a lot of fun. Very, very noisy right from the start. In fact, pre-game, it felt like a big Champions League game. It felt like it really mattered. The place was packed. And maybe that seems obvious, but obviously in Spain, we've only been 100% in the stadium. I think Atletico's first game with 100% was only a couple of weeks ago. So this still felt like sort of an occasion. And obviously given a little bit more meaning, I suppose, by the fact that the last time these two teams met was the last time there were fans in the ground. And then the game itself was fantastic. And I must admit, really, really surprised by how good Atletico's reaction was, how sustained it was, and how they really took Liverpool on.
We were interested about Suarez not starting and Felix and Griezmann and how they'd link up, and they did, didn't they?
And to be honest, that was a big part of the talking point here as well, because not so much the fact that Griezmann starts, although that in itself was significant because he's had a quite difficult start to his Atletico Madrid career. It's felt like there wasn't really a natural place for him. Not so much for the fact that Suarez wasn't starting, but that too was significant because, of course, he scored 21 league goals last year and I think is their first choice centre forward. But he'd come back from international break. It was more about how would all this kind of fit together and how would this work and what exactly were they trying to achieve. And I think the logic suggests, although Simeone didn't really talk about this after the game because so much else had happened, Suarez has struggled a little bit in the Champions League, certainly away from home. You know, that goal that he got in Milan was his first away goal, I think, for, is it 5 years? But also he's a striker that goes up against central defenders. And one of the things that I thought was really noticeable last night was that Liverpool's two central defenders didn't have a fixed point. Didn't have someone to mark. And Suarez can push defenders around and he can sort of find a way to get away from them and through sort of physicality and so on. And then you look at it and you think Van Dijk and Matip, yeah, they're not really defenders you push around. They are defenders maybe you run away from. And I thought that was one of the things that worked really well. João Félix, certainly in the first half, I thought had as good a performance as I've seen him have for Atletico. And him and Lemar, and then as were the ones that sort of really led Atletico back into it. At least this is how it felt to me in the stadium. I'm not sure about watching on the telly. And then I thought there was a really good performance as well from Rodrigo de Paul, who looks like a really good footballer.
Should we go in order of goals and moments? Barry, Liverpool's first was all about the balance of Mo Salah. I've watched it a million times. I'm convinced it's James Milner's goal, but Milner didn't celebrate and Salah's been credited with it. So maybe it was a deflection.
I did the minute by minute on this and I was utterly convinced it was Milner's goal. I thought he'd scored it deliberately. He stuck out a foot and diverted the shot goalwards. But upon seeing it a few times since, I, along with others, was mistaken. And it was diverted in by the guy who's marking Milner, whose name escapes me now.
Kondogbia.
It's a Mo Salah goal because it was on target.
I just love the fact that Salah sort of cuts inside once. And then there's another Atleti player and then he cuts inside again and there's another Atleti player and he goes, oh, well, I'll just keep doing it until I run out of Atleti players. There were 11 and I'll eventually get a shot away. He's become the first player in Liverpool history to score in 9 consecutive matches for the club, surpassed Steven Gerrard as the top scorer in the Champions League, 31 goals in 48 games. Lots of questions now about if he's... I don't know if they matter, but is he in Liverpool's all-time best 11? Is he in the Premier League all-time best 11? Philippe, I don't know if we're getting carried away yet.
No, I don't think so. I think he's in Liverpool's all-time 11, absolutely. I would say you would probably have forward line of Dalglish, Rush and Salah, probably. In the Premier League, I think there's no reason why he shouldn't be. He's currently... probably the best with perhaps in terms of form, I think with Karim Benzema is probably the best striker on the planet, as well as one of the best creators on the planet. I actually wrote a piece about him for a French website yesterday before the game, and I found myself using the kind of purple prose I usually put in the bin. But I think that we are witnessing something quite extraordinary, somebody who is a player who is at the absolute peak of his powers. And, you know, it happens, you know, it's like Michel Platini in 84 or, I don't know, Maradona in 86. You can carry on like that when a truly magnificent player is hitting heights he's never hit before. And he's 29. So plenty of time for us to enjoy it more. But honestly, yes, I think he belongs to that ultra rarefied group of players, which is all the more remarkable, Max, that he had, by standards, a difficult season last year. I mean, it's difficult when you look at the stats and numbers; they're still amazing. But compared to what he had been before, no. But it's for me, it's pretty obvious. And I would say that he's one of those players who keeps being underrated. Maybe it's because of where he plays, because he's not the centre forward; he plays from the wing. Maybe it's because he's a creator as well as a finisher. I don't know, but. It's now, for me, obvious, yes. He belongs there.
Apart from Jose Mourinho, who exactly underrated?
Well, I'm glad you've asked this, right? Because as Philippe started talking about Salah then, I was about to pose a question from the outside, which you're sort of starting to deal with anyway, which suggests we're on the same wavelength, which is pleasantly surprising. From the outside, I've sort of felt over the last 2 or 3 years, and I say this from the outside, which is why it's a question, not a statement, but there's been a slight resistance to Salah, like a resistance to recognise someone who it seems to me, and I think Philippe's right that there is a level now that is higher than before, but the level has always been incredibly high, it seems to me, and has always and been consistently high, and the numbers are unbelievable. And Barry, you're saying who's underrated him? I say this from the outside, so I ask rather than I say it. It did feel to me over the last couple of years like people weren't really talking about him. And it became sort of, it felt like it was fashionable to talk about Mane. Oh, Mane's the good one, really. Oh, we shouldn't be going on about Salah. Mane's a good one, really. Salah's level, it feels to me, has been unbelievable for the best part of 5 years now.
Oh, I was very much on the Firmino's the really good one. But he's the one that no one spotted, Lars.
I wonder if it's to do with the fact that before this season, the most sort of mind-bending year he had was his first in England, when he scored 32 in the league and 10 in the Champions League. And because he had that season straight off the bat, when he then followed up with 22 in the league and then 19 and then 22 in the league. Maybe that felt like less of an achievement because he had that completely extraordinary year first. I mean, the order in which things happen can shape people's impression. I wonder if there's something there.
I remember a couple of years ago having a debate on ESPN about the Ballon d'Or and about Messi's season. And everybody basically said, now Messi won't win the Ballon d'Or this year. It hasn't been his best season. He's not the best candidate. And Dan Thomas, the presenter, asked a really simple question, which I thought got to exactly the heart of what you're saying, Lars. And he said, if this had been Messi's first ever season, would you give him the Ballon d'Or? And absolutely everyone on set said, yeah.
If only we had someone to ask pertinent questions and hit the nail on the head. But I'm afraid no such luck. Naby Keita's goal was brilliant. I applauded. We all know that's a volley, everybody. Confirmation.
That's a proper volley, proper Max. Volley, a real one.
Naby Keita. And then Griezmann's...
None of this pseudo-volley shite.
The one thing, the extravagant movement of the leg. Have you noticed how high the leg goes? It's like a can-can dancer.
Do you know what it is, Philippe Auclair? It is like every shot that Bobby Charlton ever took. If you ever watched Bobby Charlton's shots, his feet always finish above his head somewhere.
Was it higher than Griezmann's foot when he got sent off? and I'd love to go. I mean, let's talk about Griezmann, Lars, because he scored two. The first, I think, perhaps might have been offside because I think, is it Lamar's interfering with Matip? But okay. But his second goal, that first touch was so good. And then he kicked Firmino's head off.
Yeah, he did do that. I mean, Sid can speak better about this than I can, but I was watching this game and I was thinking, I'm on the pod tomorrow. I'll do a thing about how, well, it just looks right with Griezmann in that Atleti shirt in a way it never did for Barcelona. And he just seems to fit in there in a way he never did. But of course, the point is he hasn't really fit in seamlessly after returning. It hasn't been a sort of complete, he's back, everything's great again. But here he was really good. And he is someone who obviously doesn't mind the work rate that Diego Simeone asks of his players, but still can sprinkle a little bit of magic. And even if it hasn't quite happened in the league yet, I will say it anyway, it just looks right in a way. I don't think I've ever seen him play for Barcelona and felt this is where this player should be in the way you feel here. And then, of course, yeah, he topped it off by booting a fella in the face. And then this is something that actually Philippe and I discussed on WhatsApp not that long ago before this happened. These red cards where, you know, it doesn't matter that there's no malice. And I've said this on the pod so many times that there should be, in every TV studio in the world, there should be a mechanism that whenever a pundit says he didn't mean it in regards to a red card, he gets immediately sort of dropped into a gunk tank and is never heard from again.
Surely if somebody says that, then just unintentionally someone just kicks them in the head and then ask them again whether they think it should be that decision.
But I also completely sympathize with the idea that someone who's having a good game and is party to a game being very good, being ejected from that, and you change the whole complexion of the game for something where there wasn't. It was completely accidental. But I think the rules do have to exist also to protect the safety of the players on the field. So I think actions that endanger them need to be discouraged in very, very strong terms. And the way to look at these incidents, which is the phrase that's always put to me by a referee I know and ask sometimes, you are at the end of the day responsible for where your limbs end up on the football field. And in this case, you know, his studs ended up in the fella's face and that shouldn't happen.
Yeah, but to be fair, it wasn't deliberate, was it?
Gunk tank for you, Sid Lowe.
Barry, I thought Van Dijk and Matip, well, Van Dijk didn't have a great game, and it's rare for him not to have a good game, but that Griezmann goal, sort of, Van Dijk was spinning around, was sort of facing the wrong way, sort of, you know, centre-back 101, don't turn your back type thing. He didn't look at it, and Liverpool's defence didn't look at it.
Yeah, he showed definite signs of fallibility, which is rare. He's a terrific player. Sometimes you have a not great day at the office. I don't think Liverpool's defence were helped by Naby Keita, who was at fault for both goals. Despite his tremendous volley, his defensive performance wasn't great, and he was hooked at halftime and replaced by Fabinho. Sometimes players don't have particularly good games, and Liverpool had to rely on Alisson to get them out of jail, and a perhaps benevolent, brave, bordering on foolhardy decision from Daniel Siebert, the referee, to overturn the Atletico penalty. But we have to remember, I suppose, that Virgil is just back from a year out. It is going to take him time to get back to his best. He has looked pretty imperious so far this season. But last night, Liverpool's defensive display was pretty ropey.
Lars, you know the laws of the game. That penalty that's overturned, were you surprised it was overturned?
I was a little bit, because there is a tendency for referees to just, whenever anything looks like a tangle of legs in the box like that, they'll just give it. Me personally, as an individual, subjective person, was quite happy that that was rescinded, because I just don't, it doesn't look like there even is a proper tangle of legs there. I mean, I think it looks very, very soft.
But it was a shove in the back, not a tangle of legs. It's a subjective decision, so, and the ref's opinion is the only one that matters ultimately. But under the circumstances, in a packed Wanda Metropolitano, it was quite a brave decision.
Can I move on to the handshake very briefly? Does Simeone always run down the tunnel?
And yes.
Yes. I mean, this is the thing, Max. Everyone got very excited last night. I said, oh, Simeone ran off and didn't shake his hand. I said, hang on. Simeone does this every game in a really quite theatrical sort of way. He turns and he doesn't just run down the tunnel. He sprints down that tunnel.
But why?
Every
why
time.
It, has he booked dinner at the wrong time? What is it? Surely he knows how long a football match is. He knows the protocol.
He explained this last night, Max. And actually, I think it's the first time he did explain it. Because we've been doing it for so long, we're just sort of used to it. The first couple of times, I remember thinking, oh, he's done that because he's so excited because it was a late goal. So it felt like, you know, the fist come out, he goes down the tunnel, think it's a late goal. And then you think, no, actually, this is happening every single week, whatever the score. Last night, he was asked about this, obviously because of the context of the fact that Klopp then sort of waved at him. And he said, at the end of a game, everyone's either furious or happy or whatever, and you go and shake someone's hand and it always feels a bit forced. And it's a bit forced when I have to go and shake someone's hand and I've lost. And it's a bit forced for him when he has to go and shake hands and someone's lost. And he said, and so that's one of the reasons why I always just get out of there and just let everyone else get on with it. And then we can talk later.
Fair enough.
Which I think is a reasonable enough thing to do if you do it every week. And here's the point. Yes, he does.
Okay, so Liverpool top of the group. 3 wins from 3. Atleti and Porto both on 4. Milan have 0 after Porto beat AC Milan 1-0. While we've got you, Sid, let's do Real Madrid as well. They won 5-0 in Shakhtar. Vinicius Junior scored a wonderful goal. Bob says, I don't watch a lot of La Liga. Is he starting to justify the hype when he first appeared on the scene? Or has he always been good and I've just not been paying attention?
A little bit of both. It's curious, actually, the use of the word hype, because in Spain he was sort of laughed at for a long time because very, very exciting. He runs at people, but then he would trip over his feet or run out of pitch or miss his chances. And he was very hurried in front of goal. He didn't have the coolness for his finishing. And this season that started to fall into place. I've always liked him because I think he's a bit different, even when it doesn't always have an end product. So I suppose what he's justifying from a Spanish point of view isn't so much the hype as those people who sort of defended him when everyone else was laughing at him.
Real are level on points with Sheriff in that group. Sheriff, Lars, they lost to Inter. Their 100% record is gone.
Yeah, though the game did feature another great strike by Sebastian Thiel, their midfielder, the most unexpected star of this season's Champions League, who scored a great free kick. But, you know, Inter got the job done in the end, as you'd expect. I mean, Arturo Vidal, when he scored, the commentator remarked that he's on more money than the entire Sheriff squad put together. So I guess, I mean, that's the reality of modern football right there.
Max, can I go back very quickly to Real Madrid and Karim Benzema?
By all means.
First of all, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that Benzema went above Santillana in the goal scoring records of Real Madrid.
I think you're right.
And yeah. We were talking about Salah and I was mentioning Benzema. I've never seen him play at that kind of level. I mean, it's just phenomenal. He's just phenomenal. But there is one thing I've got to add. It's also a difficult time for Karim Benzema because between today and Friday, he's supposed to go to the French tribunal. We finally, you know, this famous Mathieu Valbuena sex tape affair. He's supposed to go to the court. I don't know if it's something that's talked about in Spain. I don't know if he's going to turn up or not. I know that the stakes are very, very high for him because what he's accused of is serious. It's complicity in blackmail, attempt to blackmail Nacho Valbuena. And, you know, it's 5 years in jail is the recommended verdict for this. So I don't know how it go, if it's even talked about in Spain, but it seems this affair has been at the back for so long now, but it's actually getting closer to resolution at the moment, Max.
We should say here that Benzema has denied any wrongdoing. His lawyer described the case against the footballer as absurd. Sid?
Yeah, from a Spanish point of view, obviously this was something that everybody knew about because of the French case, but it wasn't front and centre of coverage here and hasn't been. And it's been picked up on the fact that he's due to be in court this week, but picked up on almost as a kind of, I don't know how to put this, almost as a curiosity. Oh, that court case thing has happened. Obviously, when it starts and when the testimonies are heard and so on, and then I think it will become a bigger thing, but it hasn't. The focus on Benzema, obviously, as everyone knows at the moment, is the very, very, very conscious drive to get him the Ballon d'Or at the moment. That's where all of the focus is at the moment with Benzema.
Sid, thanks. You can go now.
Pleasure. Cheerio.
Sid Lowe out in Spain, and that'll do for part one. Part two will round up the rest of the Champions League games. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Let's look at PSG and Manchester City's group. They both won, one slightly more convincingly than the other. PSG beating Leipzig 3-2. Lars, I thought Leipzig were quite unlucky in this football match.
They were very unlucky, but I guess what should be said is that there is an extent to which they were the architects of their own downfall as well. They are, and this is something we've seen in Germany so far under Jesse Marsch's leadership, they are sometimes frightfully open at the back. That out of the way, I did think they looked a lot better than PSG and created more chances and of course had a penalty that I'm not wild about given against them. So there was a lot going on here.
I think it was a foul. I mean, I agree with you, but he does push him with both his hands. It seems like a silly idea, Lars.
It's clumsy. It's clumsy by the defender, but for me, that falls in under. Like, I'm sure I get why it's given. It falls a bit under what I think the Premier League referees have been getting right this season, which is to look not just whether there's contact, but whether it actually impedes the player, or whether it's the player who decides, oh, look, an arm, I can fall down now.
Maybe.
And it was a clear case of looking for it, as we say, on this.
I mean, I didn't
island.
Want them. I didn't want them to get it, Philippe.
The penalty. The victory. Yeah. Yes, it was a very unpopular penalty outside of the Parc des Princes, I must say. They were, honestly, I've been trying to think of a game in that context where a team is as bad as PSG was and concedes as many chances. It was insane. I've got my notes in front of me. I've got 4th minute, 7th minute, 10th minute. 3 clear-cut chances already for Leipzig. But again, it's exactly what happened to them against Manchester City. They lost 6-3, didn't they? And so they're widely open at the back. But from PSG point of view, despite the fact that at one point they really looked like they were going to lose that, and they probably would have if there hadn't been By the way, Lars, isn't there a foul at the start of the equalising goal for PSG?
Well, Messi fouled someone, didn't he? Yeah.
Debatable, mm-hmm. But for me, there is a foul. Anyway, but that was really the moment when the game turned. But the one thing that surprises me, and perhaps not enough has been made of that in the French press, is the fact that Neymar was not available because he's slightly injured. This means that for once, Pochettino could actually not have to think, how am I going to put the three together and then sort something out? No, he had two attacking players, therefore he could actually organize his team so that it would be more solid. And it wasn't. In fact, it was a shambles. An absolute shambles. And the number of chances Leipzig created, I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. And of course, the last bit was the comedy of errors. The comedy, really, with Kylian Mbappé basically reenacting what he did against Switzerland at the Euro with his penalty. And I know you want to talk about the panenka, Max. I can see this in your eyes.
I mean, it's just a
because you like it. You like a nice panenka, and it was a very nice.
It was beautiful,
one.
Wasn't it? It did everything you wanted a panenka to do.
Mm. The arc was right. The speed was right. The way it fell in the net was right.
And the keeper has to play a part in the. You know, the keeper has to go in the right way for the panenka to look as perfect as it did. Barry, when do you have PSG collapsing like they do this season in the Champions League?
On the evidence of what I've seen so far, I don't think they'll win it. They are going to win it sometime, presumably. And at that point, lots of people will crawl out from the woodwork to point and scoff and jeer at me. People were actually interesting, just to sort of go off on a tangent. People were saying on Twitter last night, wow, these Champions League group stages have been brilliant, and it's one in the eye for people who say they're boring, but it's the format that's boring. You know, you're always going to get very good individual games in the format, but we're now in a position where Liverpool, if they draw their next game, will probably qualify with two games to spare. That's when it becomes boring.
Well, I think they are, and every game in the Champions League is fascinating, especially if you're watching it in Australia. I mean, they have been good.
Max's marketing drive aside, I think it's been a good group stage so far. There's been fun games.
But there's always fun games.
Not always. There have been some years where you're like, oh, this has been a bit rubbish, isn't it? I think there's been consistently fun match days, to use that slightly awful word in the group. And also, whenever I hear the sort of we'd like more jeopardy, we'd like more stakes, we'd like people to get knocked out earlier and stuff, it's like, yeah, but then also they lose one game and we don't see them again all year. I don't mind that we have a stage now where we have some games where there's not absolute jeopardy in every game. And also, I think that facilitates slightly better football. I think there's less sort of paranoid and defensive football because they know you can afford to lose a game or two in the group stage.
Yeah, I think there have been. I've been pleasantly pleased that there have been some really brilliant. If you think about the Liverpool Milan game, you think about like Sheriff winning in the Bernabeu. There have been some really, really good. You know, Bayern like eviscerating Barcelona on the opening game. You know, there've been some interesting stories as well as interesting games, I think. But hopefully, that's not just me being a company man.
But lastly, before we leave PSG, I would like to. I get this logic that if they keep spending a lot of money, sooner or later they'll win it. Sure. But I don't think they'll automatically win it. I'm not convinced they'll win it with the three musketeers here, just because I'm not sure you can win the Champions League when you have effectively 7.5 players without the ball, outfield players without the ball. You know, you have two players in Messi and Mbappe who just don't do anything when you don't have the ball, and you have Neymar who does a little bit more than he gets credit for. But you're carrying 2.5 players. And Pochettino, God bless him, is trying to figure out a way of making this work. So far, I think he's trying to just put a lot of legs in midfield with Verratti and Gay and Herrera. But I don't think it can work. I'm without wanting to go full Wilson, I'm increasingly convinced you can't win the Champions League like that.
Dean says, how pleased are the pod that Wanda and Mauro are back together? I must confess, I'm not completely across this story, but I believe Mauro Icardi is having some love issues and seems to be dating some kind of supermodel type person. Can anybody furnish me with the details?
Mauro, his partner is Wanda, who's also his agent, who I believe he cuckolded some other player to
poor old Maxi Gomez
get with her. Maxi Gomez, yes. Anyway, Wanda found some naughty messages on Mauro's phone, which were he had sent to an Argentinian model of some description, and she was unimpressed with the content of said messages, said she was leaving Mauro. He begged for forgiveness. Then she posted a picture of her hand on Instagram minus a wedding ring or engagement ring or whatever, and said it was better without the rings on it. And then Mauro missed the PSG game for family reasons, which I guess probably were related to this turn of events, and had taken the night off seems to have worked, because it has now emerged that Wanda has welcomed him back into the fold.
Oh, that's
presumably
good.
With some strict caveats and conditions.
It's a power play to book the marriage counselling during the game, isn't it? To say, you're coming to this or it's all over.
Did Mauro find the teapot then?
Well, the teapot's yet to... We haven't heard about the teapot, if you're thinking about the timing.
Almost hasn't been in the pod yet.
Anyway, something...
I know, but this is part of the game, Max. We're warping time here. We're already warping time with you in Australia. Now we're warping time within
of course
the
we
Guardian
are.
Podcast
it
itself.
It will all come clear. Bruges 1, Manchester City 5. Apparently a lot of booing could be heard at kickoff when the players took the knee. I didn't hear that or see that. But disappointing if it did. What is the story from this game? Phil Foden is a brilliant footballer, Lars.
Yeah. Yes. Mahrez is going to be. Manchester City are a lot better than Club Brugge again. Which I mean, I don't want to go into the sort of financial discrepancies here, but they're pretty notable. Now listen, City can do this to teams. They're an incredible football team, and against a team of much fewer resources, they absolutely played them off the park, and they do so very well, very very well. And I mean, I guess we talk about Paris Saint Germain throwing all the money in the world at all the superstars in the world, and still looking an incoherent mess. Man City have not done that. They've used all their money and built a proper team that plays brilliant football. And well done to them.
Bruges have an annual wage bill of 18 million euros, I think. Or
roughly the same as Kevin De Bruyne, I guess.
Probably. Only two Premier League teams have a smaller wage bill. Can you guess who they are?
Burnley and Norwich.
Incorrect on both counts.
Norwich and
Manchester
Brentford.
Manchester United and Tottenham.
Now that you've decided not to take my question seriously, I'm going to give you the answer.
Norwich and Brentford?
Leeds and Brentford.
Ah, those Leeds numbers must be outdated.
Anyway. No, I don't think so. But this is from last season, so.
I enjoyed the quiz. I'm sorry for not taking it seriously, Barry. Will you forgive me?
Yes.
Oh, great. That's nice. Much like Wanderer and Mauro, we're back together, aren't we? There we are. While Lars worries about numbers in the background. Group C, Ajax 4, Dortmund 0. Ajax looked brilliant in this game, Lars. Is this the next Ten Hag team? It feels slightly more hodgepodge than the 2019 Ajax.
But it's a significant result, this, because I think with Ajax, and with all due respect to the Dutch league and our Dutch listeners, I always find it really hard to judge when they look brilliant domestically. And they beat Sporting, and were very good in that game, and they beat Besiktas. But you think, okay, but now you're playing a team from the Bundesliga, now you're playing the team that's second in the league in Germany. We'll see how good you actually are. It turns out they're actually bloody brilliant. I mean, it was quite something. This Dortmund were not at the races at all. A disastrous performance by them. But I think we should focus on how good Ajax were in nullifying them. They were more aggressive. They were pressing. It's the thing you always wonder about, how good they will fare defensively when they come up against stronger, attacking individuals in Dortmund. And I really thought Ajax would struggle here, and I was completely wrong. They were so effective in nullifying Dortmund. And you say hodgepodge, and I guess because you see guys like Aller and Berghuis and these guys, it's not all a team of sort of highly gifted toddlers from their academy, but it's kind of more balanced as well. And there's Antony is a very, very promising player, obviously. Gravenberch in midfield looks great. There's a bit of everything here, and they look absolutely terrific. And a big day, of course, for us Sebastian Aller truthers. The Sebastian Aller is very good society. We need a better name, really. But I've been very high up in the hierarchy of that society for a few years now, and it's been a tough few years, but it's starting to look good.
Sebastian Haller is terrific, society. The problem is the acronym would be a bit bad.
maybe actually that just means the acronym is correct.
There you are, Lars.
Possible acronym.
You're the chairman. We don't need to say it, do we?
I am.
You are the chairman. Oh, shit. Well, there we are. Also in that group, Sporting 1-4-1 in Besiktas. Philippe,
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I think quite a few eyebrows will be raised because Sporting has been a little bit blowing hot and cold this season, particularly cold. But I would recommend watching at least the goals, because the fourth one from Porto is absolutely magnificent. It's Paulinho. That strike is absolutely, first time strike is absolutely magnificent. And the curl on the ball is absolutely exquisite.
And also there was a disallowed goal. That was a great injustice because it was an extraordinary finish and a great rubbish set. I love it when goals are so good that the player doesn't quite know what to make of himself and the celebration is a bit rubbish.
It was like an overhead volley, not an overhead kick, but like the ball comes over his head and he volleys it as it's coming over. It's one of those ones, which is sort of one of the hardest skills in the game. Let's do a little bit of Europa League. Celtic kicked off at 3:30 on a Tuesday afternoon, which is a lovely time for a football match, isn't it, for various reasons. And they beat Ferencvaros 2-0. Barca Jim, our mate, says, I take it we'll get a fit bar corner on the basis there was nothing else on other than Tipping Point, and most of the panel will have watched the Celtic game. He says that Jota pass, and this is Jota, who is... he's called Yao Felipe. He's just a mixture of all of lots of brilliant footballers, as far as I can tell. But he played a wonderful pass to Furiasha, who is a really excellent player. And signs are good for Ange Postecoglou, Baz.
I like your presumption that I would have chosen this game over Tipping Point.
Who won Tipping Point? Was it Brenda from Stevenage?
I did actually watch the Celtic game after I'd figured out why it was on a Tuesday at 3:30, load of bureaucratic reasons I won't bore anyone with, but it was a good performance from Celtic. They needed it because they lost their two previous games, conceding 4 in each, I think. Furiashi looked a great player, and he's been banging in goals for fun. Hugely impressive that Celtic Park appeared to be full to capacity at Tuesday at 3:30.
I was listening to the podcast of Hawksby and Jacobs, and some painter had just texted in and said, I've just painted a house quicker than I ever have before to get to kickoff. So there's one house in Glasgow where he's just chucked a bucket of undercoat and then buggered off to the football. But anyway, that'll do for part two. Part three will begin with Arsenal's heroic draw at home to Palace. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Monday Night Football was a while ago, but it was Arsenal 2 Palace 2. It was an entertaining game. Duncan Alexander, time for season 17 of succession of unforced defensive errors from Arsenal. I enjoyed that one. Johnny says, Wilson has a weekly slot on why Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's rubbish. Will there be an Arteta version, or is lower mid-table again all good? Otherwise, does start to look a bit odd. Philippe, what did you think of this game?
That it followed a pattern. And the pattern is Arsenal enter the game with the best of intentions, quite high intensity, especially up front. There's a lot of pressing from Smith Rowe and Saka and Aubameyang and so forth. And sometimes it's rewarded. It was rewarded against Spurs, for example. And it was rewarded to start with against Palace. And then a goal is scored, and a very good goal, by the way. And then the intensity drops. And then because the intensity of the pressing drops and you've got in front of you a team that actually wants to get back into the game and has got the qualities for that, you suddenly realize that, oh, where's the midfield? There is no real midfield. And it's very easy then to go through and cut through Arsenal, especially when you put Martin Odegaard and Thomas Partey together as a kind of double, I wouldn't call it defensive pivot. And basically the team has lost its shape. Then it panics a little bit and goes back to its 30 yards. And then it concedes. And then when it's lucky, scores a goal in the seventh of the 5 minutes of added time, something like that. And it's a draw and everybody goes, "Ooh, that was close, wasn't it?" But it's following a pattern. And it's the pattern which really I find more worrying than the results of the performances, you know, and the best we've seen of Arsenal this season is 45 minutes against a very bad Tottenham. That's it. Otherwise, it's 15 minutes here, 15 minutes there, and then the old problems start to happen again. The balance again, for me, is missing, is lacking.
J- James MacArthur arguably lucky not to get sent off for kicking Bukayo Saka. What I really loved about this, I mean, if you haven't seen it, the ball's coming out of the sky. It would drop to MacArthur's feet, but Saka clears it about 20 minutes before MacArthur thinks, oh, well, I'll just whack him in the calf. It went to VAR and, you know, the match centre said it was a high-end yellow card. You know, these are not just normal yellow cards. These are M&S yellow cards. With these yellow cards, you are really spoiling us. I mean, I really love the idea of a high-end yellow card. It's a wonderful thing, isn't it? Absolutely baffling that that wasn't overturned. Barry, will you praise Crystal Palace, please? Because they did play well.
I will absolutely praise Crystal Palace. After they hammered Spurs, some Arsenal fans completely lost the run of themselves and thought, oh, this is it, you know, we've turned the corner. This is another game where I'm looking at Arsenal going, I don't know what their plan is, this famous plan. Arteta keeps going on about it, or his blueprint. But Patrick Vieira has only been in situ at Palace for, you know, a few months. You can see what his plan is, and he's getting there and it's working. I thought they were tremendous. You have to bear in mind they're missing Wilf Zaha. They no longer look as if they're depending on him to change games. They were missing Ebrezi Ezi, who, you know, remains out. That's two of their best players who are missing. They still play that well. And another slightly curious point, we've yet to see any sign of Will Hughes in a Crystal Palace shirt. Signed him from Watford. He hasn't played yet. I believe he's fit, but no sign of him yet, which seems slightly odd to me. But anyway, I do think Patrick Vieira perhaps deserves a little bit of criticism for the substitution he made. He brought on Tompkins for Odson Edward when Edward was injured. And I think that unbalanced them and probably didn't help. But he is a novice manager and will make mistakes and learn from them. But yeah, I think Palace definitely deserve praise.
Philippe, would you like to rant about FIFA?
Oh, it's not a rant. It's just giving some information and, you know, trying to keep
our... We'll be the judges of whether it's a rant or not, Philippe.
Okay, all right, that's very true. But keep you abreast of what is happening in the famous World Cup two-year cycle thing and the latest dastardly act of FIFA. There is this week a FIFA Council meeting. Now, the FIFA Council is a bit like a cabinet meeting for a government. So it's 37 members, obviously chaired by Gianni Infantino. The presidents of all the confederations are that, and a number of other delegates who are elected by the federation. So 37 members. And the idea is that what they want to do, they cannot vote on the two-year cycle, but what they can do is vote on holding a special extraordinary congress in December. And at this congress, everybody would be there. The 211 FAs, associations, would be there. And then they could actually put the proposal of the two-year cycle in December. Now, which is, you know, very devious because at the moment we're supposed to be in the feasibility study and, you know, it should be about the dialogue and so forth, of which there is not. There's basically people shouting at each other, and which, you know, I suppose is the 21st century version of dialogue, people shouting at each other. But yeah, it's a bit like an EastEnders episode. Nobody's listening to anybody. And so by doing that, they got to circumvent the whole negotiation period and put it to the Congress. And you can bet your bottom dollar, yen, renminbi,
Bitcoin,
and that the Congress would say, yes, we want a two-year World Cup. Because the big guys are against it, the smaller guys are all for it. And the smaller guys are the majority. And a majority which is going to be large enough to carry that. So keep your ears peeled and your eyes peeled for an announcement before the end of the week that a special extraordinary congress will be held in December at which Mr. Infantino can bulldoze through his idea of a World Cup every 2 years.
And this is, you know, the thing that drives me mad with sports politics is that people get interested way too late. You know, people got wanted to do something about the Qatar World Cup years and years after it was actually decided. This is something that people need to get angry about now. This is something people need to get excited about now. If you want this to not happen, if you want Gianni Infantino to not force through a two-year World Cup cycle that very few people want, you got to write to your local MP, I almost said. You got to write to your local FA. If you're part of any organizing committee anywhere, you got to try to put this on the agenda. You got to, because this is happening now.
While we're on admin of things we don't want, a fresh document published by Wirtschaftswoche, which I think is Business Week, has revealed how the Super League is now planning to make a comeback with the hope of winning hearts and minds, claimed the permanent membership of...
Idiots.
It's claimed the... Has it got work to do, Philippe? I mean, let me at least tell you one sentence and see if...
Come on.
It's claimed the permanent membership of clubs will be removed from the new proposals, which would see a top division of 20 teams and a second tier, which would also consist of 20 clubs. And you would qualify each season through your league. It is a rival to the new plan for the Champions League, which is in 24-25. So, yeah, keep everything eyes, ears, noses peeled for that too. While we're on admin, the Premier League's released official figures for the first time show 81% of players have had at least one dose of the vaccine. League said it would continue to work with clubs to encourage vaccination among players and club staff. England have been given a one-match stadium ban. That was on Monday following the final at Wembley of Euro 2020. It was not our finest hour as a major host of international sporting events, said the understated UK Sports Chief Operating Officer Simon Morton at the DCMS committee. It was the opposite of what we want big sporting events to feel like. It was pretty shocking. Downing Street insisted the 2030 bid was very strong despite the Wembley trouble. I think the FA said they were disappointed by the one-game ban.
Yeah.
I mean, I think most people, Baz, think it could have been quite a lot more.
I think it was incredibly lenient, and they were a bit bang out of order saying they were disappointed with it. On what grounds were they disappointed? Did they expect to not get punished at all for what was, you know, an extremely unsavoury turn of events?
Premier League clubs have voted to temporarily block teams agreeing lucrative sponsorship deals, coincidentally linked to a club's owners after the Saudi takeover of Newcastle United. 18 clubs voted in favour of the ban at an emergency meeting on Monday. Manchester City abstained and Newcastle voted against. Who'd have thought it?
What I loved was one unnamed club official quoted and said, "This is not a knee-jerk reaction to the Newcastle takeover. Far from it. This is an issue that has been a concern for the majority of Premier League clubs for many years."
Philippe, does this mean Newcastle can't suddenly buy James Tarkowski? What does it actually mean?
At the moment, it means nothing much because, as I understand it, it's a kind of temporary measure. And to be honest, it's a little bit, you're going to have to define what is a related party, for example. In principle, I totally agree with it. And again, it's, as Lars was saying, something that should have been in place a long time ago because it's been used and abused by other clubs in the past.
Well, I mean, the non-executive chairman of Newcastle is also the chairman of Saudi Aramco, the Saudi state oil company. So you could imagine that they might want to sign a very lucrative deal with Newcastle United. And of course, if the Premier League thinks PAF are separate from the Saudi state, maybe they're also gullible enough to think that a company that has the same chairman as the club is also separate from them. I mean, anything is possible these days.
The problem is, and they're not doing Newcastle any favours at all here, the Premier League haven't commented on this, so we're all left to draw our own amusing conclusions. Newcastle just become an object of ridicule. But if the Premier League actually came out and spoke, provided some clarity, then we wouldn't have to speculate. It's almost as if they're ashamed of this.
I mean, apart from their initial announcement, which said they, the Premier League, were pleased with the process, they've been pretty conspicuous in their absence.
But there's nothing they can say, Barry. That's the problem. That would actually, there is no explanation to be given apart from the fact that we listen to the money, and that's it. And we, because it's not, we're not in the age of post-truth. We're in the age of lies, which is not the same thing. And when they say PIF is distinct from the Saudi government, and everybody knows, they know it's not true. They're just lying to our faces. And then, of course, when they talk about a legally binding arrangement or whatever it is, of course the question, well, what are they? What can they be? Show us the money, so to speak. And, of course, there's nothing to be shown there. So they haven't spoken, be it Richard Masters or Gary Hoffman, who is apparently, by the way, on the hot seat because a number of clubs haven't quite liked the way he's dealt with the whole situation. And you have to compare how keen the Premier League was to talk to reporters and answer their questions at the time of the Super League, because it made them look good, and compare that with their current attitude when it comes to comment about what's happening with Newcastle and how they've basically rubber-stamped the takeover. It's shocking.
Arguably less important. Liam says, I want a two-hour special on the Plymouth goal.
You've been looking forward to this all...
It was so wet. I mean, everybody will have seen it. If you haven't seen it, just Google Plymouth goal. Go on whatever social media you use, regardless of whether the Saudis own a small part of that social media company. And just watch this utterly hilarious goal where Bolton are trying to pass it. The ball gets caught in the water. Then a Plymouth player runs clear and then runs past the ball. Then another player, Plymouth player runs past the ball. And eventually another Plymouth player just whacks it in the middle of the goal. It's just absolutely hilarious.
And then the entire Plymouth team aquaplane into the corner in celebration.
Jack says, this is the best chant for a team that's 4-0 down. Portsmouth fans just singing, we've lost the ball, we've lost the ball, we've got the ball, we've lost the ball, we've lost... Just 4-0 down, and they were just commenting. They were just doing the possession stats so Sky didn't have to. And finally, the... Yeovil player who missed a penalty in the shootout against Weymouth. They did go through, but there is a steward facing the crowd and the ball just hits him straight on the head. And he
celebrates. That's the beauty of it.
He does.
Looking at it now, the steward took that well. I mean, I guess as a steward, you have to not lose face in front of the crowd. I mean, your authority is pretty precarious as it is. But he's handled that ball to the face tremendously well. He stayed on his feet, you know. Well done, the steward.
Look, we've got lots of lovely emails, which I'll save for tomorrow because we've gone on for so long. But we'll finish with the fact that 15 boys were called Lucifer last year and 8 were called Barry.
Oh, no.
Richard Jolly alerted me to this. Bit harsh on Barry. He's only half as popular as Lucifer. Callum, how does Barry feel to be an endangered name? There were, according to the Office of National Statistics, no Philippes. 13 Larses, 15 Lucifers, and 1,585 Maxes. So there you go. But yes, Lucifer is interesting, isn't it? I mean, it is a bold choice for a baby.
Lucy.
Lou for short. Lucy. Here's Lucy. It's Lucy. But
I feel like there's been an uptick in Larses, though. Has there? I mean, surely they're closer to zero. I mean... Fewer than Lucifer is a blow, but more than zero, I'll take it.
You think Lucy, and when you're really angry, you say, Lucifer, come here. Don't do that at the playground. Blimey. Anyway, you okay, Barry? Do you mind? There's only 8 Barrys this year.
I don't mind. Don't mind.
You don't mind? I mean, presumably a few more Philippes in France and a few more Larses in Norway, we'd imagine.
You'd hope so, but maybe I've killed it off.
We can check. Could somebody let us know, please? I certainly can't be bothered to do that research, and I don't want the fact checkers to get on our case again. And that'll do for today. Thank you so much, Lars.
Yeah, thank you very much, Max.
Thanks, Philippe.
Thank you, Max.
Cheers, Baz.
You're welcome.
Back for more of this tomorrow.
This is The Guardian.
Max, could I very quickly get a cup of tea? It's ready. Just fill my mug. 1 second. Thank you. Apologies for having anglicised my lifestyle to such an extent that I cannot possibly talk on The Guardian Football Weekly without a cup a mug of tea by my side. When I had the teapot was already ready.
Oh, marvellous. Could you describe your teapot for us?
It's kind of, the colours a bit Fortnum and Mason-y, you know, this kind of jade green, mm-hmm. made by a French company called Guy de Grain. Very, very smart teapot, actually.
Women love a man with a teapot. I always found if you pull on a night out and you wake up the next morning and make a woman a pot of tea rather than just a tea bag in a mug, they love it. They love it.
Is that right? Is this the follow up to Hitch or whatever that Will Smith movie was, where he was a sort of love guru, but he couldn't work it out for himself? Is that what you're saying? Yeah. Number one.
I haven't seen it, but it sounds about right.
Number one, teapot. Who knew? Who knew a teapot was so important?
It's little things like that.
When did you last use your teapot? Which is now is a question I will always ask you the question in that particular way now.